This is Mary Mortland reading the Decatur Herald, Part 2 for Tuesday, December 29, 2015. We begin with a few obituaries. Keith Holman Howell, 92 of Decatur, passed away Friday, December 25th in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services to celebrate Keith's life will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, December 30th at Northwest Christian Church, 1306 North Stanley Avenue, Decatur. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, December 29th at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and for 30 minutes prior to the services at the church. Family requests casual attire. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Northwest Christian Church or the Alzheimer's Association. Robert Brownie Blakeman of Sarasota, Florida, died December 18th. A celebration of his life is planned in the spring. Richard Lee Dick McGinnis, 87, of Lexington, Virginia, died Saturday, December 26th. A family gathering will be held at a later date. Interment will take place in Illinois at a later date. Edwin Harold Miller, 71, of Moroa, passed away 6:45 a.m. December 26th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A gathering of family and friends will be 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 3rd at the Fireplace, 109 East Main, Moroa. Private burial will be at a later date. Memorials may be directed to the Edwin Harold Miller Memorial Fund. Orville E. Rhodes, 85, Assumption, retired from Caterpillar Incorporated and Navy veteran, died December 26th. Funeral Mass, 10 a.m. Thursday, December 31st at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Assumption. Visitation, 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, December 30th in Sites Funeral Home, Assumption, with 5 p.m. prayer service. Burial, St. Mary Cemetery, Assumption, with full military rites. Memorials, Alzheimer's Association. Elaine Marie Tatchell Mills Molin, 91 of Taylorville, passed away Sunday, December 27th at 1:55 p.m. at Taylorville Care Center in Taylorville. Funeral services will be held Thursday, December 31st at 10 a.m. at Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville with Pastor Gerald McPhillips officiating. Burial will be in Oak Hill Cemetery in Taylorville, Illinois. Visitation will be held Wednesday, December 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Sutton Memorial Home in Taylorville. Gary L. Plummer, 58 of Centralia, formerly of Bemet, passed away at 3:28 p.m. on Friday, December 25th at St. Mary's Hospital, Centralia. Graveside services will be held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 30th at the Bemet Township Cemetery. The pastor, Tim Davis, will officiate. Memorial contributions can be made to the Special Olympics program or the Relay for Life in Centralia, Illinois. Leola Jane Scott, 89, of Bethany, passed away 9:02 a.m. Monday, December 28th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 30th at the McMullen Young Funeral Home, Bethany. Visitation will be held 1 hour before the services at the funeral home in Bethany. Burial will be in the Marrowbone Township Cemetery, Bethany. Memorials may be made to the Bethany United Methodist Church. Betty O'Haron, 91 of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, December 24th in Symphony of Decatur. Private services will be held. Arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Now we have some editorials. Policy lead to population loss. People are leaving Illinois in droves, according to the latest U.S. Census Bureau report, which begs the question, how much more evidence does anyone need that the policies of the last 20 years are detrimental to the state? In figures for the year that ended on July 1st, Illinois led the nation in population loss due to domestic migration, people moving within the U.S. The state saw about 105,200 more people leave than arrive. That number was offset by about 37,600 new residents due to international migration. When you figure in natural growth, birth minus deaths, the state's population decreased by about 22,000 people. That led the nation in population loss by a large amount. Connecticut was second with a loss of about 3,876. The impact is pretty simple to figure out. Lower population means there are fewer people paying taxes, which will continue to put a strain on state and local government budgets. The numbers are also a clear indication that, unlike other states in the Midwest, Illinois is not creating new jobs fast enough. Undoubtedly, there are other factors that affect migration. There is a national trend to move toward the South and West. Some of that is based on job availability and better climate. However, most of the states attracting new residents have a better business climate and lower taxes than Illinois. New York was the only other state to show a six-figure loss in domestic migration. But that state with still slowed population growth thanks to the international migration and natural growth. All of the states bordering Illinois showed a net population growth, with Iowa leading the way at 14,418 new residents. Residents aren't flocking to Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, Missouri, and Michigan because the weather is better. Governor Bruce Rauner's office said the figures are further evidence that his reform policies need to be adopted. House Speaker Michael Madigan's office said the data from the Census Bureau offered no analysis and the Democratic leader chose not to offer an analysis. Well, here's an analysis. While there are certainly natural migration patterns to the South and West, Illinois simply isn't competing in the job or business creation arena. In fact, the state's policies and high taxes have given businesses and residents ample reasons to leave the state. Many businesses can increase their bottom line simply by moving across a state line. Many residents can give themselves a pay raise by relocating. Illinois has a lot of wonderful resources, but until the state becomes more business-friendly and gets its financial house in order, the growth in jobs won't occur. Trump's support may be deeper than polls indicate. Washington. The biggest political news is that Donald Trump may be doing even better than the polls have suggested. Yikes! No kidding. Apparently, many Trump supporters have been fibbing to pollsters, saying they're for someone else when they really intend to vote for the Donald. And those fudging the most are college-educated voters because it seems they're too embarrassed to admit their preference. As well they should be. I'm kidding, sort of. Imagine it this way. Guy on the phone asks whom you prefer for president. You can say, I really like the bragging, eye-rolling, profane, nativist, misogynistic, policy-free billionaire, birther, jerk, Jeb Bush's word. Or you can select a more sensible candidate and keep your Trump crush to yourself. Thanks to this treasonous gap, okay, this is interesting anomaly. These recent findings by the polling group Morning Consult should shake up things a bit. Notably, Trump's predicted ceiling of 35% to 40%, the figures many prognosticators have used to urge against Trump's becoming the Republican nominee, may be higher, and his nomination, therefore, more likely. Morning Consult revealed the propensity to prevaricate, which was unique to Trump, by posing the which do you prefer question to registered Republicans and independents who lean Republican. The polling was done by three means, a live person on the phone, an automated call, and an online survey. Turns out people are more honest online than when speaking to another person, as any Twitter follower knows. In the line survey, just 32% chose Trump, compared with 38% who picked him in the online poll. Among college-educated voters, the gap was even wider, nearly 10 percentage points. This phenomenon has previously been described as social desirability bias, meaning that people will say what they think the pollster wants to hear that in order to be liked. A reverse Bradley effect, if you will. Bradley, you'll recall, was former Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley, an African-American who ran unsuccessfully for California governor in 1982 and 1986. His 1982 defeat surprised pollsters who had predicted an easy win based on polling. Apparently, many people were fearful of being considered racist and falsely said that they were going to vote for him. Now we have people not saying they'll vote for Trump, lest the telephone surveyor think they're out of their minds. But the question remains, why do people like Trump, even knowing that they probably shouldn't? Morning Consult's revelations got me thinking, and by Jove, I think I've got it. Donald Trump is white man's last stand. Hold your donkeys. This doesn't mean that Trump supporters are racist, xenophobic, nativist, anti-immigrant, or ignorant. It isn't only that our nation's approach to immigration defies law and logic, or even that whites will soon become a minority, though this is no small thing in the identity equation. Nor, finally, is it because Trump is the precise opposite of Barack Obama, although this surely helps. No, I think it's more than embarrassment that prevents people, especially college-educated folks, from confessing to Trumpism. I think they know it's wrong to want such a person as a president of the United States. To choose Trump requires a conscious suspension of judgment in exchange for the passing pleasure of hearing one's buried feelings expressed. Based on my research and observations in writing Save the Males, conservative white guys aren't so much trying to hold on to power and privilege as much as they're trying to find their footing in a culture they feel devalues and disrespects them. They're tired of hearing that they're the source of all their problems. They're sick of being the single demographic about which one can say anything at all and suffer only the annoyance of deafening applause. Into this world gone awry, drops Trump, the rich and powerful wizard of Fifth Avenue, the deal-making champ with plush planes, a Palm Beach palace, and a pin-up girl for a wife. His politically incorrect shtick often be pure meanness masquerading as truth, but to those who've watched the country of their childhood reshaped into something unfamiliar, it sounds like the Morbid Tabernacle Choir singing Handel's Messiah. Trump is that guy. He promises to return America to its greatness, in English, while defiantly shouting Merry Christmas and waving from the mistletoe-draped portal of his jet, his other arm encircling the wasp-waisted babe every man secretly wishes were his. Hell yes, I'm voting for that, thinks white guy to himself, as he says to the pollster, Ted Cruz, because as far as he's concerned, Donald Trump is the American dream, and his minions want that back, too. Now we have some letters to the editor. Statistics show fewer guns would mean fewer murders. The FBI's crime statistics show that in the last 13 years, 2002 to 2014, twice as many murders in the U.S. were committed with guns than by all other methods combined. Some of these murders might have been committed with other weapons, if no gun had been available, but it seems likely that many of these deaths would not have occurred in the absence of a gun. A careful look at the FBI statistics for the 10 states with the least restrictive gun laws and the 10 states with the most restrictive gun laws, based on the Best States for Gun Owners rankings by Guns and Ammo magazine, reveals that, on average, states with the most restrictive gun ownership laws have a smaller percentage of their murders committed with guns. We can argue over the best way to reduce murders in the country, but it is indisputable that there would be fewer murders if fewer guns were available. Columnist, Clinton had a very Merry Christmas. It must have been tough for Bill Clinton to come up with a good Christmas present for his wife this year. She didn't have to ask for much for him or Santa because the political gods have already given her just about all she could want. Hillary Clinton has never been an ideal candidate for president. If she were, she'd be looking forward to her final year in the White House instead of reacquainting herself with the charms of New Hampshire winter. The flaws that sank her against Barack Obama remain. She's a wooden campaigner. She has a maddening penchant for secrecy and dissembling. She has accumulated a long record of scandals and dubious choices during her decades in the public life. She voted for the Iraq War. 4 years as Secretary of State yielded more minuses, the failed Russia reset, Benghazi her private email server, than pluses. Carly Fiorina landed a telling blow when she said, if you want to stump a Democrat, ask them to name an accomplishment of Mrs. Clinton's. But none of these vulnerabilities has derailed her campaign. On the contrary, they have been turned into irrelevancies or even assets. Almost everything that has happened in the last 6 months has worked to Clinton's advantage. First, in the weak field of other candidates for the Democratic nomination, Bernie Sanders' grim demeanor, leftist policies, and modest debating skills have kept him a distant second in national polls. Martin O'Malley, offering a younger and more liberal alternative to Clinton, has found few takers. There was one person who posed a real threat, Elizabeth Warren, whose populist message and pugnacious style enthralled Democrats in a way Clinton never has. On top of that, the senator from Massachusetts would have neutralized the historical potential of Clinton as the first female president. When Warren decided against a race, she gave Clinton an open highway. Second in the weak field of candidates for the Republican nomination, Clinton had to worry that someone with appeal beyond the GOP base would rise to the top: Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, or John Kasich. Bush, a fluent Spanish speaker whose wife was born in Mexico, or Rubio, a Cuban American, also had the chance to recapture Hispanics who have abandoned the GOP. But the GOP has done its best to come to her aid. The leading candidate, Donald Trump, has the highest unfavorable rating of anyone in either party's race. His campaign is brilliantly engineered to drive Latinos, blacks, and Muslims into the Democratic camp, along with women, 56% of whom voted Democratic in the 2012 presidential election. His closest rival, Ted Cruz, has run a cartoonishly ideological campaign that is bound to alienate everyone except Tea Party stalwarts. Not only do Trump and Cruz have serious liabilities for the general election, but their flaws help to hide Clinton's Next to their incendiary rhetoric, her stolid manner and tedious oratory make her look serious. Juxtaposed with their vast inexperience in foreign affairs, her years of diplomacy convey that she knows her way around a perilous world. On the ultimate presidential question, whom would you trust with the nuclear button? Trump and Cruz represent the ultimate risk. There are many good reasons why she should not be president, but the way it's shaping up, this campaign could make Americans forget them. Here's another letter. Divinity recipe brings back memories. Arlene Manline's recipe for Divinity brought back a lot of Christmas memories. I cannot begin to count the number of times I helped my mom make Divinity over the years. She never had a candy thermometer but used ice water to test the sugar mixture. We only had a hand mixer, so when the candy started to get really thick, everybody had to take a turn whipping by hand. I have a couple of tips to pass on to readers. Do not make Divinity when it's damp outside. From experience, it will never set up. You will eat it with a spoon. And two, the candy mixture starts out very shiny and it needs to be beaten until it starts to look dull. It's then ready to be dropped by spoonfuls onto wax or parchment paper. My mom usually cracked black walnuts and picked their meats out for this candy, which made it really special. Thanks for the walk down memory lane. I have a memory like that too. My mom used to make Divinity, but she can't anymore. Oil price slump drains trading. U.S. stocks closed Monday modestly lower on Monday as a deepening slump in crude oil prices pulled down energy and mining stocks on a lighter-than-usual day of trading. Chevron fell 1.8%, the most in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. CONSOL Energy sank 9%. After recovering a bit last week, U.S. crude oil fell 3% amid reports that Iran intends to increase exports by 500,000 barrels per day once economic sanctions are removed. That would only add to excess global supplies that have helped depress oil prices. Investors worry that falling oil prices could be a signal of further economic weakness ahead, said Paul Christopher, head global market strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute. I don't think that's the case, but we think that what's weighing on the market today, Christopher said. The Dow lost 23.9 points, or 0.1%, to 17,528.27. The Standard & Poor's 500 index fell 4.49 points, or 0.2%, to 2,056.50. The NASDAQ Composite shed 7.51 points, or 0.2%, to 5,040.99. With less than a week to go in 2015, the Dow is down 1.7% for the year, while the S&P 500 is essentially flat with a loss of 0.1%. The NASDAQ is up 6.4% for the year. The three major indices were headed lower from the start of the regular trading on Monday, and it didn't shift out of the negative territory the rest of the day. Energy and mining companies felt the brunt of the sell-off. Chevron fell $1.69 to $90.36, while ExxonMobil lost 59 cents, or 0.7%, to $78.74. CONSOL Energy tumbled 78 cents to $7.87, while Chesapeake Energy slid 38 cents, or 8.5%, to $4.07. Mining company Freeport-McMoRan sank 9.5% following the news that James R. Moffatt, the company's executive chairman and co-founder, is stepping down. Plunging commodity prices have led to mass layoffs across the entire industry. The move follows the recent revelation that activist investor Carl Icahn has taken a huge stake in the company. The stock shed 72 cents to 6.85. Six of the 10 sectors in the S&P 500 index moved lower. Energy stocks fell the most, 1.8%. The sector is down 23.2% this year. Consumer discretionary stocks fared the best, gaining 0.3%. That sector is the best performer so far this year, up 9.1%. Trading volume was lighter than usual following the Christmas holiday weekend. That's likely to be the case this week as well, ahead of the New Year's Day holiday, said David Shigolet, managing director of investments at the Private Client Reserve at U.S. Bank. We could see heightened volatility given the low volume, but I don't see anything fundamental happening between now and the end of the year that could drive prices in either direction, Shigolet said. Benchmark U.S. crude shed $1.29 or 3.4% to close at $36.81 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Among other energy futures, wholesale gasoline fell 0.3 cents to close at $1.233 a gallon. Heating oil fell 1 cent to close at $1.09 a gallon. And natural gas rose 20 cents to close at $2.228 per 1,000 cubic feet. Major stock indexes in Europe also ended lower on Monday. Germany's DAX fell 0.7%, while France's CAC 40 was off 1%. Trading in Asian markets was mixed. Japan's Nikkei added 0.6%, while the Shanghai Composite Index lost 2.6%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng slipped 1%. The London Stock Exchange remained closed for the holiday. Amazon says holiday set records but didn't offer details. Trenton, New Jersey. Online retailer Amazon has been a prime beneficiary of more consumers doing their holiday shopping online and procrastinating. Amazon Prime, the company's $99 a year loyalty program that includes unlimited free 2-day shipping, gained 3 million new members in the third year of December alone. Meanwhile, the number of Prime members shopping via mobile more than doubled this holiday season, Amazon said Monday. Amazon report covers trends and percentage changes in its shipments, but doesn't give sales figures or the number of items shipped. In response to an Associated Press request for details, Amazon.com Incorporated said it isn't sharing additional information. The 20-year-old company said Christmas Eve was the biggest day yet for deliveries by the company's Prime Now service, which now offers free 2-hour delivery to more than 20 metropolitan areas. Seattle-based Amazon also said it shipped a record number of items worldwide for the holidays, with items going to 185 countries. Amazon is profiting from major trends reshaping holiday shopping in the U.S. More and more people do part or even all their shopping online, increasingly using mobile devices such as tablets and smartphones to window shop, and then buy items from their couch or their desk at work. Retailers are deluging consumers with email offers for online-only deals. And procrastinators, once stuck with dealing with huge crowds at shopping malls and big box stores right before Christmas, now can do last-minute shopping online. Amazon and other retailers promise that items ordered as late as the morning of Christmas Eve would arrive by midnight. Amazon said nearly 70% of its customers this holiday used a mobile device to shop. Worldwide on Cyber Monday alone, those customers ordered more than 35 electronic items per second, and Adele's new CD 25 every 3 seconds. Star Wars makes jump to $1 billion, Los Angeles. Star Wars: The Force Awakens has reached $1 billion at the box office, achieving the milestone with record-setting speed. The Walt Disney Company said The Force Awakens crossed the billion-dollar mark Sunday, accomplishing the feat in just 12 days. The previous movie to reach $1 billion the fastest was Universal's Jurassic World, which did it in 13 days in June. Jurassic World also had the benefit of record grosses in China. The Force Awakens doesn't open in the world's second largest movie market until January 9th. J.J. Abrams' installment of Star Wars also posted the biggest Christmas Day box office in history, with $49.3 million and the second-best weekend earnings with $153.5 million. The Force Awakens has been setting records since its debut December 17th. It brought in a galactic $238 million in North America over its opening weekend, besting previous record-setter Jurassic World, and set international opening weekend records in Australia, New Zealand, and throughout Europe. It scored the biggest worldwide debut with $529 million. It also topped $100 million in IMAX screenings in 10 days, another global record. You almost have to rewrite all the record books for this movie, box office analyst Paul Dagarabedian of Rentrack said, it's absolutely mind-blowing that Star Wars could get to $1 billion in 12 days, and it hasn't even opened in China, the second biggest movie market in the world. A juggernaut like Star Wars empowers the entire industry, Dagarabedian said. It's great for the audiences, great for studios and theater owners in particular, who can point to this and say the movie theater industry is as viable and relevant as it's ever been. Here are some things to check out. Green luxury. More than a dozen of New York City's most famous hotels are pledging to get greener. The Waldorf Astoria New York, the Lotte New York Palace, and the Crowne Plaza Times Square are among 16 major hotels whose owners have agreed to cut greenhouse gases from their buildings by 30% or more in the next decade. That's the goal of the NYC Carbon Challenge program created by Mayor Bill de Blasio. The mayor said in a statement that if iconic hotels can take this step, anyone can. Frisco gets graffiti. San Francisco's city attorney is demanding that Justin Bieber's music publisher help determine who is responsible for sidewalk graffiti promoting the pop star's latest album. City Attorney Dennis Herrera sent a letter to the Universal Music Group on Monday, saying the graffiti appears to have been applied with spray paint that has not come off. That contrasts with other recent sidewalk marketing campaigns that have used chalk, according to Herrera. Herrera said Public Works crews have removed some of the graffiti at great expense, though he did not provide a figure. He released photographs of 8 instances of the graffiti and asked for Universal's help in determining its scope. Emails seeking comment from the Universal Music Group were not returned. This has been Mary Mortland reading the Decatur Herald Part 2 for Tuesday, December 29th, 2015. I hope you have a happy new year.